bureaus worldwide. This is FSN.
Thank you, Holly. FSN there. Salford. We're live in Salford. How are you? Tuesday, don't get ahead of yourself. Tuesday's programme, July 28th, 2020. It is the BBG with you for the next couple of hours. As usual, I've got two very interesting guests for you.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Now, I can't wait for you to meet Belle Staffy in hour two. She is a UK-based radical feminist writer, activist, has a degree in sociology, and has worked as a probation officer as well, dealing with male sexual offenders. Very interesting lady, very smart. Been chatting with her on Twitter, and she's coming on the programme today to talk about self-identification for trans people, trans women, and what that means for women and women's safety. We will also talk about how Twitter has introduced, at least to me anyway, the concept of minor attracted persons. We would call, I think you and me, people who are attracted to children, we would call them paedophiles. There seems to be some move to normalise people who think that way, who fancy, who have sexual fantasies about children. What's going on? We'll talk to Belle Staffy about that in the second hour as well. Before that, the jazz saxophonist, the writer, terrific writer, Gilad Asmon, old friend of the programme. He's been defending the grime artist Wiley, who's been banned from Facebook this afternoon because of anti-Semitic posts he made last Friday. Why is Gilad defending him? It's cut and dry, right? Well, we'll find out. I'll put it to Gilad Asmon this hour. He joins me in around about 20 minutes time. That's Tuesday's Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. And March, it's like we're back in March. It's so crazy today with rain, heavy rain, intermittent sun, spells of sunshine, lovely, gorgeous, then wind, then back to rain. It's mad, really. But you know, when you're working, it doesn't matter because you're stuck indoors anyway. There you go. How's the cricket going? Does anybody want to tell me? I resisted the temptation to watch it today because I had a job to do. Now, Oldham, Greater Manchester, new restrictions on movements there. Localised flare-ups of COVID, they're saying. They're turning us, or they're trying to turn us all into nervous wrecks, aren't they? Everybody's nerves are fraying, and that's putting it mildly. Everybody is finding themselves shorter with people. And I don't mean vertically challenged people. I mean people are getting short. They're falling out with people. Everybody's on edge because the lockdown. Are we in? Are we out? Are we in? Are we out? Can we go out? Can we go in? What's going on? The obesity strategy in the news today as well. You have swimmers like Sharon Davies, very successful swimmer, very, very successful athlete, and by all accounts a smart woman, demanding that we do something about our obesity because it's costing the NHS £6 billion a year. We're a bunch of fat lardasses. Selfish creatures we are when we're overweight. We should think of everybody else. They're weaponising the individual human being now. They're telling us we're weapons. We're a bunch of germ bags. And now we're a bunch of fatties. That our fatness, perceived fatness, represents a clear and present danger to everybody else. These are mad times. Doctors can prescribe cycling, literally, can give you a prescription and then give you access to a bike and send you out on the highway to kill a pedestrian or to drive yourself or cycle yourself in front of the number 11 bus to Eccles. Yeah. And you know what really pisses me off? They said that they're going to make thousands more miles of cycle lanes. No! Please don't! Right? I am a keep fit enthusiast. I like cycling. I don't cycle, but I used to, and I like it. But cyclists are bastards. They don't use the cycle lanes there already. It's disgraceful the amount of times I've had to politely say to people on the footpaths, on the sidewalks of Salford, cycling towards me at pace, "You dipstick, there's a fucking cycle lane right there. Why won't you use it?" With their stupid GoPro cameras on their heads. I hate cyclists, really. I don't, actually. But don't make any more cycle lanes. I was just about to put a Range Rover on the road. I need all the room I can get. Of course, I'm not putting a Range Rover on the road or anything like it. Tommy Robinson, Stephen Yaxley, Lennon, whatever his name is off to live in Spain. On spawn, as we say, Oscuelga. That's the Irish language. He's off to live in on spawn. Because apparently life has become unbearable for Tommy in the UK. He alleges that somebody or somebody's tried to set fire to his home. If true, it's disgraceful. Let's hope they're caught and put in prison. But there is a libel case looming too. Tommy was stupid enough to tweet, to post on Facebook a libelous tirade against a young Syrian boy who got the shite beaten out of him in a school. Tommy hinted that the poor Syrian boy might have deserved it because he had beaten up a white girl. He didn't, or anything like it. The libel case is pending. It was suggested today that Tommy is thick enough to believe that he can hide from the libel in Spain. Tommy, if you're listening, you can't. You can't hide from it in Spain, son. What about cats and COVID? You probably heard this yesterday, didn't you? We had the first case of a domestic pet being diagnosed with COVID-19. The media was full of it today. What does it mean? Will our pets die? Do hamsters get it? What about my tortoise? Mad stuff. You will hear GMB presenter Kate Garraway, that's Good Morning Britain, and then you'll hear a lady called Dos Santos, that's her surname, she's a vet. Serious questions, this is big developments in the COVID saga. If our pets are getting it, well, we're doomed. GMB, you'll hear the presenter first.
We're now joined by Daniela Dos Santos, who's president of the British Veterinary Association. Daniela, lots of people are going to be very worried about this. As a nation, we love our pets, and during lockdown, they've kept many people sane because it's company and something to do and get on with. So lots of questions raised by this first case. First of all, are we absolutely confident we can't catch coronavirus off an infected pet?
I mean, it's wonderful, isn't it? It's wonderful to be alive. What a time to be alive, to witness this stuff. This hard news coverage. This is serious stuff. Forget the storming of the Iranian embassy. Forget the march on Baghdad. This is groundbreaking stuff. Can we catch COVID from our furry friends? Can we?
So there is absolutely no evidence anywhere in the world of pets transmitting COVID back to humans. In fact, the handful of cases that have been where we've had infected owners passing on to pets. So this really isn't a cause for alarm.
Exactly. It's no cause for alarm. We're the germ bags. People. We're the problem. The pets aren't giving it to us. We're giving it to the pets.
We don't want people to panic.
No panic. And you could see the face of the presenters in studio. They're in studio. It's back to studio. They were crestfallen. Crestfallen. It's not what they wanted to hear. They wanted to hear, yes, you can catch it from your pets. You can catch it from your pets.
If an owner is sitting at home now and they suspect that they do have symptoms for COVID, if they haven't got a positive diagnosis just yet, what advice...
So you're sitting at home now and you feel a bit of a tickle at the back of your throat and you think, Jesus, I might have COVID. I might have COVID. And you look over at Fido there or Rex and you think, what do I do? I could give it to him or her. Groundbreaking.
Are you giving them with regarding
their... Give them the Pulitzer on Good Morning Britain.
...their pets.
So it's the same advice that we've been given throughout the pandemic, which is about hygiene. So make sure you're practicing good hygiene, hand washing, catching any coughs or sneezes into tissues and discarding them immediately. But also consider trying to minimise contact with your pets as much as possible. So of course you...
What? Minimise contact with your pets as much as possible?
Of course you still need to feed your pets, for example.
Well, it's... Yes, we have to feed our pets.
Wash your hands before and after. But if you have a particularly affectionate cat or dog, for example, that likes to snuggle up to you, maybe reconsider, because it is all about that close contact.
Fantastic. Leia, I've had time to reconsider our relationship in the midst of this devastating pandemic. I'm afraid there'll be no hugs or scratches behind the ear. Well, until it's over. We're fuckery is what we are. These are mad times. Until the pandemic is over, I'll be walking you on a very long lead. 2 metres or thereabouts. Quarantine in Spain. Not quarantine in Spain, but Spain apparently has had 900 new cases of COVID. And if you go to Spain now, you will have to quarantine yourself for 2 weeks upon return. Right. Yeah, Spanish are not happy. No, they're not happy at all, the Spanish. They're crying into their sangria because obviously tourism makes up a huge percentage. 1 euro out of every 9 comes from tourism, allegedly. I would have said more than that. And it's devastating for businesses right across Spain. Not good at all. And Boris Johnson explaining this today warned about second waves around Europe, second waves, and we'll have to rethink and shut down and impose quarantines. Here he is, Johnson.
Obviously, these are decisions for families, for individuals about where they want to go. And what we have to do is take swift and decisive action where we think that the risks are starting to bubble up again. And let's be absolutely clear about what's happening in Europe, amongst some of our European friends. I'm afraid you are starting to see, in some places, the signs of a second wave of the pandemic. And we all remember what happened last time. It's absolutely vital, therefore, that we make the necessary preparations here in the UK, as we are doing. Vital that we all continue to observe the rules on social distancing, washing our hands, wearing masks in shops.
I can't bear any more of it. Wash your hands and social distance and wear the masks and all of that. I love a bit of entrepreneurial spirit. I've never been able to say entrepreneur. Maybe I just did. I used to say entrepreneur. You've got to pronounce that or. Entrepreneur. You got to love a bit of business, a bit of derring do, a bit of spirit in the young and masks. And a young woman in Yorkshire saw an opportunity in this pandemic. And decided that there was a gap in the market for masks. A gap. And the gap was masks for Sikh men and Muslim men who've got rather long beards. How do they protect not only themselves, but more importantly, how do they protect the rest of us from their dirty germs? And Sunny Delilah, great name by the way, has the solution. She's a genuine entrepreneur in Yorkshire. I mean, what's happened to our news programmes? Here's Sunny. How does it work, Sunny Delilah? What a name.
Sure. So I came to find that men who had long beards. And turbans would tend to struggle into wear standard masks, predominantly due to not being able to place the elastic over the ears because their ears are covered with a turban. And then having a long beard, you're only covering a proportion of your actual face. So it's kind of making the mask pointless, really, because droplets can still be caught in your beard.
Droplets in your beard, you dirty bastard.
I'd kind of come across through my own father-in-law, who was one of those guys who was struggling.
Struggling now.
Which is what initially struck the creativeness, I guess, to actually make this mask for him to begin with. And
she should have taken this on Dragons then.
And then soon came to realise that this was a struggle for a lot of men, not just in the UK, but around the world as well.
We've just been looking at pictures of, I believe it was him putting it on. So just explain the design behind this. How does it work?
She actually made the front part of the mask a bit like a shield, like a soldier would use. It's a bit mad, really. It just drops right down almost to your chest and then straps that are connected around the back of the head that don't go over the ears. It isn't exactly, you know, it's not, I don't know. She's not Marie Curie.
So this mask actually does look quite a bit different to a standard mask. obviously got an elongated front, but what you don't see is that on the inside of the mask, it's actually got a beard pocket, so you can actually tuck your beard into it.
There's a beard pocket on the inside.
Beard into it. This then...
A beard pocket, just think about that.
Beard neat and tidy, and also gives you a full face covering.
This is the news in 2020. News is gone. Journalism is dead. It's magazine programmes pretending to be news programmes. This is what the advent of 24-hour-a-day rolling news channels, this is what it was meant to be. Garbage. Sonny Delilah, I'll offer you all the money for 100% of your business so that I can burn it to the ground, is what I would say if I was Duncan Bannatyne or Peter, he's taller than me. What's his name? Peter, I can't remember. A pocket on the inside of the mask to tuck in your beard. It gets even curiouser and curiouser. David Nabarro is special envoy of the World Health Organization on COVID-19. He's a doctor. He's been on UK media now constantly for 4 months. He divides his time between the BBC and Sky. Has the virus peaked? Rachel Burden of BBC Radio 5 Live asked him this morning. Has it peaked, doctor?
I was looking at the figures for numbers of new cases each day and then studying them over the period of time since we've been working on this pandemic, just preparing for this discussion now. And I have to tell you, the acceleration is continuing and increasing. And so that does mean that we're actually not able to say that the end is in sight.
Right. The end is not in sight. Oh no. Please tell us the end is in sight. But it isn't. He doesn't think that massive lockdowns are possible in the future. That sounds good. That sounds good. But the alternative is very depressing.
We think the future is not about having massive lockdowns, but instead is about putting in place the necessary steps to be able to detect cases of the virus quickly, to find chains of transmission, and then to suppress any clusters that build up, and to do that on a very regular basis. And it won't be perfect, and for the earlier months, yes, we'll have some troublesome times when there appear to be U-turns in decisions and so on.
U-turns.
But this is the way forward, is actually having a constant defence mechanism on which we can all defend.
Constant defence mechanism upon which we can all defend. We can defend. Jesus. Testing and tracing using smartphone apps alerting you that you bumped into someone with COVID. I mean, this is it. This is what he's advocating. And this isn't new, but they're really doubling down on this. You should have the app. If you're a decent citizen, you will have the app. And having the app and having your Bluetooth turned on and your location turned on means that it is possible that you'll be having, I don't know, a walk with your significant other and your doggies, and you will get an alert from your mobile phone, and it will say, get in, get in, get in, get indoors, and stay there for a week. You bumped into somebody unbeknownst to you that tested positive for the virus. And we're passing that information on to your local authority so that they can make sure that you stay in. Eh? Baldy. That's not exaggeration, by the way. That's what they want to do. The app says, get in! Get in. And stay in. And then they alert the local authority, public health officer, to keep an eye on you. So he talks about that, tracking, tracing, but also masks. Masks, masks.
Most important is just having the capacity for testing people who've got the symptoms, tracing their contacts and isolating everybody who may have the disease. Having that capacity in place is so important, backed up by a constant effort by people everywhere to maintain physical distancing, to wear face masks and to absolutely isolate themselves if they have any symptoms. It won't be perfect, as I say, but it will lead to life being able to go on despite the threat of the virus.
Yeah, it'll actually lead to an unbearable life. It's totalitarianism. To be ordered by your phone what to do, where to go, when to go there, where you can't go, It doesn't sound very nice at all, David. I'd rather just stay indoors once and for all and never leave the house again.
So you're convinced of the worth, the value of face masks now, are you? Because the WHO yes. was ambivalent about that at best at first.
Oh, she's dreadful too, Burden, isn't she? The WHO was not ambivalent about mask wearing. It specifically stated in March that masks were pretty useless.
Yes, the evidence wasn't easy to really work through.
The evidence wasn't easy to work through. This guy is allegedly a scientist.
But now we are pretty clear that if they're within a comprehensive package, that face masks have a real value. We still put a lot of emphasis on the physical distancing because we're absolutely convinced that this virus is primarily transmitted through droplets that come out when people cough or even shout and sing.
Yeah, don't be shouting and singing anymore. The droplets come out when you cough or when you shout and sing. Shouting and singing is right out. Thou shalt not sing or shout ever again. And that's about right. Don't be shouting. Upshot is we're never getting rid of this virus.
And that's the tough one, that you don't really get rid of this virus.
Yeah, that's handy.
Completely. Even if you've got a fabulous control program, you don't get rid of this virus through a lockdown, even if the lockdown is really severe. Instead, you basically got to recognize the virus just isn't going away.
Not going away, says David Navarro. Oh, I can't wait to speak with Belle Staffy, the radical feminist writer and sociologist later on in the programme. Very smart woman. I think you'll enjoy listening to her. Before that, though, Gilad Atzmon. Before that, though, a little gag. There's a guy walking down the street and he sees a sign outside a house. And the sign says, talking dog for sale. So obviously he's really interested in that. Who wouldn't be? Knocks on the door, walks in and finds, yes, the dog can speak, can converse with human beings in the English language. What have you done with your life? He says to the dog with all of that ability. Well, says the dog, I've lived a full life. I lived in the Alps rescuing avalanche victims. I served my country in Iraq and now I spend my days helping out at an old folks home reading books to the residents there. The guy is absolutely flabbergasted. He says to the dog's owner, why on earth would you want to get rid of an incredible dog like that? The owner says, because he's a fucking liar. He never did any of that. Never did any of it. Thankfully, I'm not here all week. This is the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester. Gilad Atzmon with me in 2 minutes. Good to be with you. How you doing? It is Niall Rogers, Sheikh LaFreak on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Just before we welcome back Gilad Atzmon, the acclaimed jazz saxophonist and author and philosopher, let me just bring you up to speed on the Wiley story. I don't know very much about grime music, but this guy's very successful. The godfather of grime, allegedly. He posted on Twitter on Friday. It caused a lot of offence. He was suspended by Twitter and by Instagram. Today, Facebook has offended him. Excuse me. They might have offended him. They suspended him because he shared abusive posts aimed at his Jewish critics, apparently. His comments today came after the big, I suppose, ruckus on Friday and over the weekend. He's been suspended by Facebook. You know that a lot of celebrities in the UK have moved away from Twitter for 48 hours in protest at Twitter not dealing with this guy's posts sooner than they had. Before we welcome Gilad back to the programme, let's first of all get rid of Sheik. Let's hear from Tracy Ann Oberman. She's an actress. You'll know her from TV and films in the UK. She's a Jewish woman. She was speaking to Sky News and talking not just about Wiley, but also about the obligation of social media companies like Twitter and others to deal with so-called hate speech. Here's Tracy Ann Oberman. We'll hear from Gilad Atzmon in a moment.
Wiley hates Jewish people. He's made that very obvious. He's compared us to the Ku Klux Klan and says that we control the world and that we're the most evil people that exist and should be shot. That's painful to hear. But if Wiley wants to be a racist, that's fine. But what isn't fine is if sites like Twitter, Instagram and Facebook give him an amplifier, a megaphone, if you will, to spew that hatred out to 500,000 followers. others without holding him to account. I think my big point through all of this, and what so many people agree with, is that if Twitter, for example, wants to be just a race hate site and allow anything to go, then it must be transparent and say, this is what we are. You can post anything here. In which case, people like myself, the people that I know, wouldn't choose to be on it. But they don't want to be seen like that. They have guidelines put into place. And so they've got to treat race hate very seriously and remove it from 500,000 followers.
Your comments, please, to at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. Gilad Atzmon, of course, is Israeli born. An old friend of this programme's, he published a book called Being in Time. He's had several books, but Being in Time about identity politics, a great read. Obviously a successful musician, the Blockheads and all the rest of it. We've butted heads on this issue before, my friend. Welcome back to the programme. It's lovely to have you. What in the name of Jehovah are you doing defending this guy? Suggesting the Jews should be shot. Let me finish. Suggesting that the Jews should be shot is incitement to hatred, no matter what anybody might think about Jews in the UK or anywhere else. I'm surprised that you've jumped in with both feet to defend this guy. Why have you done that?
Okay, so to start with, I don't defend any incitement of violence. And I don't know why you mentioned it.
Because you didn't mention it on Twitter. That's why. This guy said, using slang terms that are used in grime music, the Jews should be shot. Now, that's not nice.
Yeah, but this is, to start with, we are taking it too far already. To start with, it is pretty impossible for us to see what this guy has written for a few reasons. One of the first reason is nobody actually quotes his tweets. And what you are referring to is something that can be interpreted. This is what I read because I couldn't see this tweet. And I obviously wouldn't defend any form of incitement of violence. I'm totally against it. However, I do believe in freedom of speech, and I am not so sure that Wiley, and I don't know him. You didn't mention it. I'm a musician, and I'm kind of a famous musician. I never worked with him. There is no connection between us, but I went yesterday to look at the BBC, and even the BBC didn't actually present his quotes. What they did instead is provided us a kind of a monologue by one of its broadcaster, by Emma Barnett. And to be honest with you, I assumed that, and I took them all down, and I'm happy to share them with your, I would like to share them with your listeners.
Yeah, but before we do that, hang on a second here. This is not the Gilad Atzmon show. I'll be happy to give you a show, my friend, on this platform anytime you want. But before you talk about what Barnett did yesterday, and you will not be censored here, as you well know, you can say whatever you want. I've seen the tweets. The guy was suggesting that Jews should be shot. I'm not piling in on the guy.
Can you read me that? Because what I understood that he referred to scorn. And this is something that some people interpret.
It's well known, Gilad. That particular phrase is well known to mean pulling a gun on somebody and shooting them. It's well known to do that. Look, I'm with you.
We don't have to go there because, as I mentioned, I didn't refer to this tweet in any of my tweets. All right. As far as I can say, I can see all the people who the accusations against Wiley are referring to racism and anti-Semitism. I don't see many people kind of accusing him of inciting violence. The reference to this specific statement, I read it. Listen, English is not my language. He referred to scorn, and some people understand it as a call for violence or shooting, but I want to believe that this is not the case. Oh, and anyway, I would never defend an incitement of violence, and so we can save the energy and move to the more interesting.
Yes,
topic.
And I want to talk about what I was very critical of what Emma Barnett had to say yesterday, but more from a purist point of view. I'm a broadcast journalist, and if I'm working for an organisation, not my own, on this programme, I get to break and bend rules because it obviously is what it obviously is. It's a one-man show. But if I'm working for the Irish or UK national broadcaster, I shouldn't be carrying on the way Emma Barnett carried on yesterday, and I want to hear what you have to say on that. But is this a hill you really want to die on? And I totally agree with free speech. While he should be allowed to say whatever he wants, he shouldn't be cancelled and all of that, I believe that we should be able to debate and talk about anything. But Jews are sick to death of this from people. You own the police, you own all the money, you're controlling the world. Who can blame Jews for saying, hang on, who can blame Jews for saying, ah, fuck off, man. We've had enough of this shit. How is this benefiting me? I live in Cheetham Hill in England. I go to the synagogue. What are you talking about? Jews are sick of it. Go on.
I'm ready. I'm happy to address this issue. So to start with, when it comes, you know, I was very careful in the way I dealt with this issue with Wiley, and I definitely didn't refer to any tweet by him that condoned violence or anything as such. But what I wrote on Twitter yesterday is that this Wiley incident was a great opportunity for Britain to look in the mirror. If Britain would be an open space, the place I immigrated to 25 years ago, this Wiley incident or saga would have triggered a wide and open discussion. And the question that we would have asked would be, why Jews? Why Jews once again? Why black versus Jews? But instead of picking the challenge, the BBC recycled once again the same Jewish monologue. And to a certain extent, and I know that you are doing your journalist job, you actually repeated it. We are tired of it. We are, and now let's try to address it. Now, I didn't understand that you were dealing with Emma Barnett yesterday. I saw it late. You know, I'm quite busy here.
Hey, listen. Just before you talk about Emma Barnett, let me set it up for our listeners because some of them won't know. Emma Barnett is a young BBC presenter who is a non-observant Jew, by her own words, been with the BBC a few years. Her family are Jewish. Her grandmother escaped Germany, and she opened her programme yesterday morning, having had a holiday in the UK, came back and opened it with a 3 or 4 minute tirade about what Wiley had done on Friday. Some people would say that, you know, the rules prohibiting opinions of personal opinions for BBC presenters should be relaxed in a situation like that. Others like me, I would say, no matter what your opinion, no matter how offended you are, shut up and get different sides of the argument on and let people argue it out themselves. So she went on and on about Wiley and the statements about Jews controlling the world and how offensive that was and how hurtful that was. And I'm guessing that a significant amount of Jewish people in this country listening to that might have been nodding along. Now, you want to respond to what she said?
I want to because I didn't have a chance to see. I saw the first, I believe that it was the first Wiley tweets, and he said something like, Israel belongs to us, meant black people and not you. And this triggered a huge response from the usual suspect. And this was the only tweet that I saw. And I thought to myself at that stage that if Jews can claim that Palestine belongs to them, despite the fact that they have nothing to do with this place, or if they have something to do with this place, or if something, some of them have something to do with this place, it happened 2,000 years ago, despite the fact that the Palestinians are living there. So Wiley has the same right to say what he say, and he's definitely less violent at that stage, at least, than most Zionists, or what the most Zionists believe. Anyway, so I started to look for what Wiley said. His Twitter page looks like Gaza after an IDF Zionist raid. You know, most of the tweets are erased, so I couldn't figure out what he really said. So I tried to look on news outlet. Nobody really quoted him, which is quite peculiar, because what it means is that we are not even allowed to know what is it that we are not allowed to say.
Yeah,
this is the situation in Britain, at least in Soviet Russia, 1970s. You knew in Nazi Germany, you knew what you are not allowed to say. In Britain, it's kind of a vague area. There is a cloud that you are not allowed to touch. This is not a free society. This is a totalitarian, authoritarian society that manifests the most problematic and dangerous element of authoritarianism.
Now, this is good. This is good. Let's stay with this. This is good. Wiley basically challenged the diaspora edition or explanation of history, and believes, and I know other black men and women, some academics, some not, believe that the that part of the world was populated by black people before anybody else. This got up the noses of people. I agree with you. If he wants to discuss that, he can discuss that.
I don't want to discuss that.
No. I'm not saying that you want to discuss it, but I'm saying I don't see why he would be.
I don't want to discuss it, because it's quite obvious that if a Jew from England can say Palestine is mine, Wiley has the right to say Israel is mine. And there is no dispute about it. And the fact that so many Jews were angered by it. By the way, I don't even know if so many Jews, some Jews were angered by this statement, is in itself an indication of how problematic the situation is and how unhinged they are.
You raise a very good point. Hang on. It's unfair. It's unfair to suggest that Jews are unhinged. Hang on.
I didn't say some Jews.
You're making a very good point here now. And the point is, who takes offence? This is an excellent point, and it's one that's missed by the mainstream media. So you see a pylon on Twitter, and it is reported by the media that the Jewish community is up in arms about something said by Wiley. That's a very good thing to discuss, that, because I'm convinced, somebody who has and does work with Jewish people in Manchester, that for many Jewish people, they just couldn't give a damn what anybody says. Others are like, well, free speech. And then there might be some who might be annoyed by that. But this is a very good point you're making about social media in general.
I'm sorry to say that, you know, we've spoken so many times about it, and so many times you raised this issue. And it is all true that there are Jews who don't care, blah, blah, blah. But I must admit that we don't really see Jews standing up here and defending freedom of speech or what used to be British values.
Well, let's not waste time on that bloody argument. But that's unfair. Look, you and I have had this out before. That's the same as so when a guy goes on the rampage with a knife on London Bridge, Muslims should stand up and say, we don't stand with that. That's, for a guy as bright as you, and you're one of the brightest people I've ever met, that's garbage.
This is a fair argument. I disagree. But the fact remains the same. You know, the Jews are operating Politically, they are a very significant power in political power in Britain. Nobody can deny that 80% of our conservatives MPs are members of the Conservative Friends of Israel. If they are such a significant political power in terms of lobbies in the media, in the BBC, in television, why is it that not one Jew say, listen, I'm offended, but I'm allowed to be offended. Let me be offended. Why don't we use, why, and more than that, how is it possible that not one British figure of statue stands up and say, hang on a minute, let's look at it. Why is this guy so upset? How is it that we forgot how to ask questions?
Yeah.
We learn to react. We learn to react in panic. And then, in 2 weeks, we will see kind of a new CAA or CST or ADL statistics. And we will find out, because we already found out, that 30% of Brits and 50% of Europeans believe that Jews are too powerful in business, and 25 have that doubts about the Holocaust, the way, you know, all the statistics that we see all the time. And all those statistics reveal that Wiley is actually not alone. He just speaks something that many people only allow themselves to express in statistics as long as they remain anonymous.
You and I don't, and we don't disagree
why,
here.
This is why I see in the monologue by Emma Barnett a very dangerous, it's not her, I don't have a problem with her, she looks like a nice person, I know nothing about her. But it's a very dangerous monologue. And it's important for me to go there because I transcribe some of it. And it is very misleading and it's very problematic. And why I went to listen to Emma Barnett? Because she claimed to read the tweets and she read them. She read them. Do you allow me to tell you what she told us?
You don't have to ask permission to say anything on this program.
Oh,
as
no,
you
but
well know.
I really think that it's important. So to start with, she opened her program telling, and this is a quote, that what she found in Riley was straight out of the Hitler playbook of 1930s Nazi Germany. I was really excited, you know. Oh my God, really? Am I going to hear now Adolf Hitler? So the first quote that she brought was, the first tweet apparently, Jewish people are coward, do something to me, I'm waiting. This is something that Wiley wrote as a Twitter.
Yeah.
I'm afraid to say it doesn't sound like Hitler to me. But one thing is clear, they came for him, for Wiley, and as hard as they could, which means really, Richie, that the guy was slightly prophetic. Maybe they should consider integrating him into the Bible. Then she say, they act rough, but they hide behind the police. I'm sorry to say, this also doesn't sound to me like Hitler. It sounds more like one of the Jewish pressure group, British Jewish pressure groups bragging about their success, which they often do. You know, you can go back to you know, the website. It's quite astonishing.
I made this point yesterday on my program. I made this very point.
Okay.
It doesn't sound like Hitler because it isn't anything that Hitler would have said.
Has,
it sounded like a guy
do,
having
it
a rant.
To do with Hitler, and this is very clear. This is very, it must be very clear. We are accusing this guy of racism. I don't say that he loves Jews. I'm not sure that he loves Jews, and I don't think that it should be obligatory. And if it is obligatory, they better tell us so we do the right thing.
Right.
If it's a compulsory thing to love Jews in Britain, tell us so we don't get into trouble. And tell us what to say, and we will repeat it. But until that moment, we must make sure that this country is free and allow people to express what they think. Then she writes, who writes the laws? This is what Wiley says. Who changes the law? Who implement the law? And again, I just mentioned it, 80% of our conservative friends of Israel.
Doesn't mean the Jews are writing the laws in the country, though. It doesn't mean the Jewish are behind the laws of the country.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Then she comes, who runs the world, Wiley says. You know, we have Epstein, Maxwell, Wexner, now Dershowitz, now in the news all over the world. We know about Kushner for Trump, Rahm Emanuel for Obama, AIPAC, CFI, LFI, CRIF. Look what they did to the Labour Party. Not they. Who is they? It's not the Jews. It's Jewish pressure groups.
Good.
Okay?
Thank you.
Who runs the banking? Who runs the banking, Wiley says. You know, we know about George Soros. We know about Goldman Sachs. We know about Greenspan, Yellen. When you search Google for Jews in banking or Jews in banking, you will find 300 entries telling you not to go there. And this is exactly the problem that I'm about to touch.
Right, just before you touch that, on the banking thing, again, you are far, far too bright, and I wouldn't dream of kissing your arse. You know how bright you are. The underlying claim, or the unspoken, is that this is somehow a cabal run by Jews for the benefit of Jews.
Say,
and I know you're not saying that. Hang on, stop bloody gaslighting me. I'm not gaslighting you. I know you didn't say that. But Wiley is saying it. Oh, so the Jews have the banks. And, well, he does begin. I mean, that's what it means, you know, the Jews run the banks for the Jews. You know, go ahead.
Listen, you have. If you want to live in an open society, you have to allow people to express themselves in an open manner that can be construed, that can be understood in more than one way. If you want to live in a totalitarian society where speech is restricted and meaning is restricted, fine. But actually, I think that the big question here is why Jews versus black? Just one month after George Floyd. When George Floyd happened, they told us, listen, you know, white supremacists. I don't see the white supremacists. I see a lot of Jewish pressure groups. I'm not talking about the Jews. I'm talking about Jewish pressure groups trying to silence every black person who opened his mouth. And it's not just Wiley. Last week, it was Farrakhan. And it's, in fact, Farrakhan for many years now. One of the most articulated black person ever is silenced. And the most terrifying thing is that most of us are kind of ducking because we don't want to come under their attack. Very few people nowadays are brave enough to raise their heads. Now, the meaning of it, the reason that I'm doing it, because I care for Britain. I immigrated to Britain because it was an open society. It's not an open society. If a black person cannot say what he has in his mind, and I'm not talking now about the tweet that you referred to.
But I don't disagree anyway. I think he should be allowed to say whatever he wants. And I come from a world where people like Wiley could have his say, and rather than be demonized and booted into oblivion, he would be afforded the chance to openly discuss his experiences and why he thinks as he does. We disagree on very little, you and me. Very little.
Fine.
I agree with all of this.
I go back to Emma Barnett, and this is exactly where I agree with her, and I agree with you. When she ended her monologue, by the way, it was a monologue. Why Wiley wasn't invited to this monologue?
Dreadful.
Why couldn't she have a dialogue with him?
I reported it to Ofcom. I dropped an email to Ofcom. I've reported the interview. I won't get very far. Yeah. Not because I want to beat up Emma Barnett. She didn't do her job.
Said in the end of her speech, she said, Jews don't run the law. This is absolutely correct. But Jewish pressure groups do. And they brag about it 24/7. It's not Jews. It's Jewish pressure groups. She said, Jews do not run the banks. True. It's not the Jews who run the banks. But Jews are vastly overrepresented in every banking and investment sector in the West. She said, Jews do not run the world. True. True. It's not Jews who run the world. But AIPAC dominate American foreign policy, and CFI and LFI dominate the British, political arena.
And can you do something for me? Sorry to interrupt you. Can you do something for me? Can you acknowledge, and I've never done this before, there isn't an independent radio show in the world that has taken on the Zionist lobbies in the UK and America more than I have. There isn't an independent radio program in the world that has condemned the illegal occupation of Palestine. I'm the only presenter of my standing to declare the Israeli state to be illegitimate. I have no time for it. But I keep going back to, and I'm not going to dwell on this because we agree on most things. And I'm not trying to curry favour with anybody, and I'm scared of nobody. For listeners who don't remember, I came in for some pretty serious stick last year over this particular issue. I agree with Gilad Atzmon. He should not be exiled. He should not be demonetized. He should not lose his job. He shouldn't be scorned forevermore because he said things that people don't like. He might be wrong. He has a right to be wrong. But we have a right to question these things, right?
I really want kind of, because you will have to move to your next guest in a second. I'm not the center of this. It's not about me now, because what really concerns me is, and what concerned me about this Emma Barnett, because she asked all the right questions, and they are rhetoric questions, and she knows the answers, and she pretends. I believe. I don't know. It seems to me as if she pretends not to know the answers. And then she asks, where did it get his anti-Semitic memo from? Where did Wiley got all these ideas? And I'm quite shocked by this question, because every statistics we see from the CIA, from the ADL, from the CST, from the anti-Semitism groups, campaign groups in France, all the statistics reflect exactly what Wiley is saying. They all the time complain that everybody sees them, too powerful in banking and in media and so on and so on. And Wiley, as I read these tweets, just expressed it. Now, why we punish him? Why we don't stand up for him?
Well, we are standing up for him.
Not because we think that he's wrong, because it is too embarrassing for us to admit that, for many of us, that what he says has a lot of merits in it. Why I'm not afraid to stand up and to say this guy should trigger a debate rather than silencing him? Because I have been writing about these topics for many, many years now. So I'm probably one of the very few, if not the only one in Britain, who is saying, hang on a minute, if you are an open society, this is your golden opportunity to tackle this issue. Where are you, Brits?
Well, you're funny, because as bright as you are, I mean, the idea that Wiley's tweets present us with some great opportunity to talk about the Israeli lobby and its, you know, how it operates around the world.
It's not just the Israeli lobby. It's not just the Israeli lobby.
Or what you call Jewish power, which doesn't benefit Jewish people, as far as I can see.
We had George Floyd.
Yeah.
Everybody was upset by it. What we did, we went to the street to desecrate so-called old racists. A month later, in my eyes, we do the neck pressing to a black celebrity in the open, and not one Brit who just 2 weeks ago was in the street stand up and say, hang on a minute, if this guy is black, and 2 weeks ago I was against black being oppressed.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
I want his voice to be heard.
Let me ask you this.
Not one fucking English.
Well, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. You know the way social media operates. You know the way certain opinions are being suppressed. It. You might have said to me a couple of years ago that speaking about what you call Jewish power, right, it was taboo in this country. Well, I'm afraid it's moved on. It's not discussing the influence of powerful Jewish interests in the country. It's discussing, you know, issues around sexual identity. It's discussing many other issues, you know, around so-called vulnerable groups. It's moved on from Jewish power or Israeli influence or whatever the hell you want to call it. It's far more sinister than that. And so let me ask you this. You're convinced that nobody has stood up and said anything about Wiley. But truthfully, because of the extent of the censorship social media platforms are, you know, using, this censorship they use, using algorithmic things, how do we know that people haven't said, hey, listen...
This is a fair argument.
Yeah. I mean, they might be out there.
Fine. But I tell you something. I wrote...
Can I just say this, Gilad? Sorry, I'm going to give you the final word as I always do. This is very important now. The Irish intellectual and journalist Kevin Myers, genius, regular guest on this programme, lost his job with the Sunday Times 3 years ago because he made a quip about Claudia Winkleman and Vanessa Feltz not being stupid because they were well paid by the BBC. And Kevin said, and I paraphrase, something along the lines of, Jews are not known for their stupidity when it comes to negotiating financial contracts, or something like that. It was a nice little aside in the column. He was fired, he was called an anti-Semite. Do you know, my friend, do you know that the Irish Jewish Council came out in full support of Kevin Myers? Jews around Ireland came out and said, there's nothing anti-Semitic about that. A lot of Jews said, we take it as a backhanded compliment that we're brought up with, you know, a respect for money and earning it. Kevin Myers is a really good writer and we support him. Do you know that? And do you know that the English press utterly failed to report that the Irish Jewish Council came out in support of Kevin Myers? And the reason I'm bringing that up is, again, you said, well, how do we know that? You said, oh, where are the Brits? Where are the Jews? Well, maybe they're not being listened to. I'm going to give you the final word. I love having you on. Next time you come on for a longer segment, because we could be here all night.
Let me be honest with you. It is very possible that millions of Brits are protesting now, and we don't see it on BBC News, and we don't see it on Facebook. But this is exactly the problem that I'm talking about. This is exactly what happened in Soviet Russia before it collapsed. It wasn't tuned to what people think. It was moved by fear. And this is exactly what we see in Britain. It is impossible that the statistics would reflect exactly the views that Riley is expressing. Yet when a person is standing up and saying them, it's those ideas, we silence him immediately and use the most severe measures, including the prime minister office.
Yeah.
All right? you cannot complain about not having power while you manage just months, 1 month after George Floyd, to behave like that to a black person, to silence him, to get the Priti Patel, the British government, thousands of people walk out of Twitter and so on for 48 hours. By the way, I think that we survived. Maybe they should step up and try 48 years or maybe 48 centuries. Anyway, what I want to tell you, you told me that you'll give me the final word.
60 seconds, final word to you. Go ahead.
Okay. The first thing that I must mention is that there are no Jewish conspiracies. Jews don't try to hide their success in banking, their success in the film industry and Hollywood, and so on and so on. There are no Jewish conspiracies. Everything is done in the open. The whole issue is that we cannot really talk about it. And this is exactly what we see in the case of Wiley. He spoke about it and he was punished. Final point is, I go back to the French psychoanalyst Jacques Lacan, who said, the unconscious is the discourse of the other. What he means, that the unconscious is the fear that other people see you truly. So if yesterday you had an incident that is very embarrassing, and today you go to the street and you see some people talking among themselves, you may feel, oh shit, they're talking about me. What we see now, the fear of anti-Semitism that Emma Barnett and so many Jews are talking about, is, I believe, exactly the Lacanian concept. The conscious and unconscious is the discourse of the other. And anti-Semitism is the discourse of the goyim. It's the fear that everyone start to speak and start to see that those things that they themselves feel embarrassed about it. Now, it is good news, because it means that there is an element of guilt, but our duty as a society is to talk with Jews, to bring Wiley on Newsnight with,
of course,
Chief Rabbi, to meet, and then to make them meet and shout at each other. And this is the way to cure those issues.
And that's the point that the mainstream media is missing. You're 100% right. If you haven't read Being in Time by Gilad Atzmon, it is the best book you will ever read on identity politics, and the book becomes more relevant as the days go by, particularly in this crazy paradigm. We'll talk again real soon, and we'll get into the lockdown and the music and all that. I've got to swiftly move on to prepare for my next guest. Great debating you as always, mate. Thanks for giving us the time today. I really love having you on. Cheers, Gilad.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
And bye now. Gilad Atzmon, jazz legend and author, philosopher, live on the Richie Allen Radio Show. And as is my word, he had the last word on that. Gilad Atzmon. Here's a tune from Donna Lewis. Yes, this is good.
Feels like I'm staying.
Donna Lewis on the Richie Allen Radio Show, 10 minutes past 6, live from Salford in Greater Manchester. And it's dried out a bit, it's dried out here, yeah, it's not so bad. Let's move on and let's talk about something serious, it's very serious. This, the World Rugby is currently deciding, is considering whether to ban trans women from playing on women's rugby teams. Over the issue of safety. It would be the first sports federation to implement a ban on trans women. And this is very contentious at the moment, as you are probably aware. The hugely successful author J.K. Rowling has been speaking this week as well about what she believes is a coming medical scandal around transgender issues and NHS identity clinics and youngsters being moved towards transitioning and puberty-blocking drugs and the problems with that, the potential problems going forward with that. It's hugely contentious. I'm really looking forward to speaking with our guest this hour. She's she describes herself as a radical feminist writer, but she's a sociologist and has worked in the probation service in this country, working with male sexual offenders. And she was banned from the platform Medium, would you believe, for no good reason. She wrote a very interesting series of articles on this topic and others. Delighted to welcome to the programme, I think from Yorkshire today, Belstaffy. Belstaffy, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Hi, Alan. I'm well, thank you.
Thanks for coming on too. I really appreciate it. I know you were down south, as they say. You're back in the north now. I was thinking today about you coming on, and I was thinking, what a recent phenomenon this has been. You know, the last couple of years, this argument, this debate. And then researching it, I came across articles in The Guardian back 10 years ago demanding the silencing of the feminist Julie Bindel, whom I know is a friend of yours. So it's not that recent, really, is it? But it's very, very serious, right?
Yeah, I mean, this has been, I mean, Julie Bindel was attempted to have been silenced a long time ago about her beliefs and her views on transgenderism and queer theory. Women started being then silenced about 5 years ago. I've been silenced. I'm banned from Medium for an article that I wrote based on my professional qualifications about maintaining single sex spaces that are women only, where men don't go, whether they identify as women or not. If you're a man, you don't go to these places because they're special places for women to heal.
And this is the crux of it, isn't it? The right of women to have spaces that are reserved exclusively for women. And I've had people on from Transgender Trend, I've had transsexual women on, and they take this just as seriously as you do. I suppose as a bloke, I need to be educated here. How serious today in 2020 is, how likely is it that we're moving towards, I don't know, a situation where trans women or men who identify as women can easily access female-only spaces? How likely is that in the short term?
Okay, it's not only likely, Richie, it's actually happening. The Ministry of Justice have sent men who identify as women into women's prisons, where they have then gone on, these are serious high-risk offenders, they've then gone on to sexually assault and rape female staff and prisoners. This isn't likely, it's happening. I attended a protest last year at HMP Downview over 12 months ago about this, about trans women who are still anatomically men and always will be men, being put into places where women are very vulnerable. Women are very vulnerable in prisons and refuges. They're, you know, most of them are escaping domestic violence or child sexual abuse. These are not, these are very vulnerable women that they're putting men's feelings over the safety of women.
And I remember the Karen White story, and I remember reporting on it, and like everybody else, being aghast and bewildered, how could it happen? So you've answered a question now for me, because the obvious question is, I would have thought that the Karen White disgrace, I mean, it's a disgrace, that would have meant there would have been some imminent change, that it couldn't happen again. But are you telling me it's still going on, that trans women
it's
are being sent to...
It's still going on. HMP Downview has trans women in the prison. That is a women's establishment. There is a men's establishment 300 yards down the road. Wow. Again, it's putting men's feelings above vulnerable women's safety.
Now, don't go through me for a shortcut now. You might want to. But what do we do with trans women then who've committed serious offences? Do we isolate them, or do we build other facilities exclusively for people like that?
When I worked at HMP Leeds for a number of years. Yeah. There were transsexual women in prison at the time. They didn't get put into women's prisons. They were transsexual. Some have had full gender reassignment. They were still in a men's prison. They were in a vulnerable prisoner unit. They were under protection because of their transsexualism. There is already inbuilt within the male establishment protection for people who require added protection within prison, whether that be self-harm, suicide, or being transgender. That is provided within the male establishment.
How did though? I mean, as a human being, obviously, you know, you had your job to do, but as a human being, what were your observations of how those transgender women integrated into the male prisons? Because you are sparking something off in my mind. I don't remember. I mean, I've read every broadsheet newspaper voraciously for the last 30 years. I don't remember reading about too many incidences where trans prisoners were attacked or were sexually assaulted. What were your observations of how they fitted in male prisons?
They were on A wing where I worked at Leeds Prison, which was the vulnerable prisoner unit. They were looked after by the other cons. Some of the prison officers were not very pleasant to them, but this was back in the 1990s. Right. They've had a lot more training now, and in fact, things have gone the opposite way. They were deprived. They weren't given bras, even though they had breasts, which myself and the probation service that I worked for promoted. They had to have bras for common decency because they had breasts. The prison didn't want them having bras because they said they could be a weapon or a ligature.
Right.
But we changed policy. And it's a remarkable, you know, this. I was part of changing policy at Leeds Prison in the 90s to protect transsexual prisoners.
That's
and now I'm trying to keep transgender men out of women's prisons and refuges.
You've had a history of advocating for the rights of transgender women, but these days you get criticised as being a hateful person who doesn't recognise trans people.
I don't even listen to that anymore. I'm not. It's used to try and silence me. It doesn't work. Everyone knows me. I'm not hateful. I back everything up with facts, evidence, qualification and experience. I'm not hateful. I don't hate trans people. I am very anti-transgenderism and queer theory. There's a big difference.
I'm going to ask you now, I'm going to ask you in a second to explain it to this big thick gammon here. By the way, you might be able to help me out. I'm delighted to welcome Belle Staffy to the program today. Very qualified woman sociologist, has worked in the prison service in Leeds, as she's been telling us, is a very good writer and a radical feminist. And this is a very serious issue. Now, you just touched on something that again left me scratching my head. I describe myself as a bit of a gammon, but I'm not really. I'm a fairly down to earth, ordinary bloke.
No, I know you're not a gammon.
No, I like me point. I like me point. And when I heard that some shelters, or at least the people, the women who run certain shelters, were coming out in favour of trans women working as counsellors in shelters, again, I had to scratch my head. I don't know what it's like to be the victim of a sexual assault. I hope to God I never do. And I don't know anybody who has. But for a woman to be, you know, to go to a shelter, and there to be, and I hate to say it, and I'll get criticised for it, but for my money, it's men who identify as women. You can do what you want, but I don't see you as a woman. I never will. How can they? How can they support the rights of the trans woman, the man who identifies as a woman, over the rights of the woman who has been raped? What has happened? How has that come about?
Well, I don't think it's really up to women to work out trans women's problems and solutions.
Yeah,
I promote women. I'm a radical feminist. It's up to trans women to sort that out. I've got enough supporting women and being amplifying voices of women.
I messed up the question,
Women, all these refuges that we're talking about were started by women. We started them ourselves over the last 40, 50 years. You know, we don't just fly in and take over.
Yeah, I messed up the question because I'm a plonker. What I meant was, why are women, right, women, real women, who work or who run some of these shelters, why are they, you know, more concerned about the rights of the trans woman to be able to work?
Right, yeah, funding. It's about funding and getting a blue tick from Stonewall, who are really anti-homosexual, really, really anti-gay. It's about funding for these places. If these places are being blackmailed, if you don't take trans women, you're not getting your flipping funding.
Is that right?
That's what it's boiling down to. And basically what's happening is women who are directing these places are stuck between a rock and a hard place. We either don't get funded and we close, or we get funded and we try and manage this mess. And that's what's happening. But what's also happening, Richie, is women are knowing that these places are potentially going to be housing men in close proximity with them, who identify as women. And these women are not accessing services.
Ah, right, yeah.
So it's distorting figures. In the first place, it's coming up from Brighton. I mean, I have a lot of connections with Brighton feminist scene and the Brighton rape crisis, and women are reluctant to go and pick the phone up to speak to someone in case it's a bloody man.
So a woman could be
devastating.
You could be at the lowest deb that you could ever imagine, and there is a
brutalized. You've been brutalized for probably hours by a man. You're then sent to a hostel that it's women only to escape domestic violence, and then you and your children hear a male voice. That is horrifying, chilling, and terrifying for victims, women and children fleeing domestic violence. They don't want to hear men's tones, however they present and however much makeup they wear, or however they really want to be women, they're not.
What do you think is really behind this ultimately? And this is the $64 million question, because I read all the papers. So you read Andrew Pearce in the Daily Mail, the conservative writer. And he's a gay man, and he wrote very eloquently on this a few years ago. He doesn't understand it, and he's very nervous about it, as I am. And he said, like, we won the war. You know, gay men and women, gays and lesbians, he said, we won the war not to be beaten up, you know, not to be discriminated against in the workplace. At least that's how he feels. And he says, I don't know where this is coming from, he said. What's behind this real radical agenda? I mean, where's the money behind it? And what's the ultimate aim of it? That's what I can't figure out.
Well, the big pharma is involved. They're getting loads and loads of money through this experimental pharmaceutical purge on young lesbian and gay and gender non-conforming children. It's all transgenderism, all of it. It's informed by queer theory, which is all about blurring boundaries and confusing boundaries between age, sex, gender, what words mean. Trying to change the word of woman. It's basically blurring and confusing boundaries. That's queer theory, and that's what transgenderism is doing.
Is that the basic definition of queer theory, as you've given it to me there?
It's what I've studied over the last decade about it.
Yeah, because I know nothing about it.
It's boiled right down. It's really boiled down, Richie. But it's about confusing and confusing boundaries, blurring boundaries between age, which then promotes pedophilia, which queer theory does promote. It promotes transgenderism. Again, this moving away from the authentic self to something that we imagine we'd like to be. It's queering the boundaries between everything. It's not healthy.
I don't believe it is healthy. And it's got nothing to do with where I come from or my age. I'm as open-minded as anybody. And I am as tolerant as anybody. And I know you are, from reading your tweets. I've been voyeuristically looking at your tweets for the last couple
of
days.
Thank you. No, thank you. I'm really glad. I'm glad because they're there to... I don't invent anything. I expose things. I don't invent all this. I haven't created it. I'm exposing all this. This is what I do. And I am silenced at every corner. I'm silenced.
Yeah, you are. I see that. You are. You're not alone, but you are. I've been following it closely. Belle Staffy is our guest. She is a retired probation officer, a radical feminist writer, and a sociologist. Very interested in this subject. It's very serious. We've seen what's happened to people when they've gently probed the edges of this whole subject. J.K. Rowling, Graham Linehan, and others being rounded on by the media, by everybody. So queer theory then blurring on, and we'll come to MAPS in a minute, which is really horrifying me. I've never seen anything like this. But queer theory blurring the lines around gender and sexual orientation, what would that benefit ultimately in the end? I mean, I know you've already said Big Pharma. Is that where it ends for you, Big Pharma making massive amounts of money out of it, puberty blockers and all of that?
No, it's queer theory. If you join the dots, it's informing a lot of policy capture today. It's unpicking all that. Me and my colleagues spent 30 odd years putting child protection and safeguarding concerns in policies, and now they're just being ripped out to promote queer theory, which again is about blurring boundaries and confusing issues.
I don't care if you're a Christian or if you're not a Christian. Nobody can make a credible argument to me that we should be talking to primary school children about masturbation. And about, it's sickening, yeah, exactly. Isn't it? Where's this coming from? The same agenda.
Yeah, it's queer theory. It's a promotion of paedophilia. That's queer theory. Peter Tatchell, who I have been following for decades because he was initially, he used to be a hero of mine. He's a gay activist.
Yeah.
He has apologised for paedophile action and promoted paedophilia for 40 years. He is now involved in schools policy. We are horrified about it as safeguarders and everything. It's we're being attacked. Child protection concerns are being attacked and unpicked on every single level, and it's queer theory that's underpinning that attack.
Back in 2013, I took him on a television show in London, and I've interviewed him since, but not about this issue. I've interviewed him about thought crimes and stuff like that. He swore blind to me, and I gave him a bit of a chasing back in 2013. He swore blind to me that he does not advocate for adults having sex with minors, and that this was a stick that was used to beat him by the Guardian.
Yeah. Well, he did it last week. I found a video on YouTube last week where he is promoting sex with a 9-year-old. His words were, "Who are we to say it was abusive?" That was last week. This is a man who has no children, who is concerning himself with school policy and sex education. He is as corrupt as anything, and he is promoting queer theory.
If he said that, as you described it, if he said, "Who's to say that it's abuse with a 9-year-old?" Well, that's inexcusable. I mean, I will...
Isn't it just? It's on YouTube. If you follow back my tweets, I've retweeted it because I have a dossier on Peter Tatchell because he is so concerning to me as a child safeguard.
And I'll bring him on. I will bring him on as soon as possible and put these questions to him again. I mean, I've been saying this for about 2 weeks
that
anyway.
That would be lovely.
No, I will. I will. I mean, the video of the television interview back in 2013 has disappeared off of YouTube. And the reason that is because that TV thing was a very short-lived thing. It went bust very quickly. But he was adamant, and he said, "No way, I don't agree with it. It's wrong." And
it's all out on. You don't have to even dig much on the internet. It's all out there. Look at his association with the Paedophile Information Exchange. It's all out there on the internet. It's not lies. He hasn't been smeared. He's been caught out.
Now, in his defence, now I've got to say, he didn't have anything to do with Poi. Personally, he had nothing to do with that. I've looked into.
He wrote an essay for a book that was published by Pi. He wrote and promoted the book by putting his name to it, to an essay in a book.
They published an essay written by him, did they? Yeah, but as far as that whole campaign, and we could talk all day about Harriet Harman. God, don't get me started there. Mm. But as far as I know, Tatchell wasn't intimately involved with those people. And I'm not trying to be his. It's just because he's not here.
Oh, I know you're not. My point is he contributed to a paedophile book, so he is. He did.
I'll get him back on and we'll have a chat with him, no doubt about that. This is serious stuff now. Hayden Hewitt, who's the co-founder of LiveLeak.com, lovely bloke. You might end up talking to him yourself in the future on his television programme about these issues. He's a really good lad and obviously very well known and decent lad. And he started saying to me weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks ago, "What do you reckon to all this minor attracted person stuff?" And I said, what do you mean? And he said, it seems that Twitter seems to be creating a space for people who describe themselves as minor attracted persons. Now, as I said to you privately today, we logical people, I think, would see minor attracted persons as paedophiles. That's what you are.
Yes, correct.
And that's what I would always call them. What's happening there? Why are they suddenly turning up on Twitter and being assigned the status of almost like a vulnerable group? Like we should be kind and we should protect their rights to be who they are and to discuss this. This is strange stuff. Again, are we back to queer theory again?
Yeah, paedophiles are pushing to be recognised as sexuality, as gay men and lesbians.
The line has gone a bit on us there.
Complete abuse.
Sorry.
Of power of a child, and it's the getting off of the man. Usually, the arousal of that man about the abuse. It's not a sexuality. It's an abuse of power and control of children.
We just, the first part of that, the line just dropped out just a little bit, and that's a shame because this is really important. Do you want to repeat that again for us? Basically, these minor attracted persons looking for some sort of normalisation on Twitter, and then we kind of lost you for a minute there. We've lost Bell Staffy again. Yeah, it's
dreadful. They are trying to appeal to the kind. Are you there?
I can see you as well. I can see you as well at the same time. We lost you momentarily. Yeah, so you were explaining why this has happened, why they've turned up, and why they are seeking normalisation and acceptance.
They're seeking validation and to be classed as a sexuality, as lesbians and gays are. It's not a sexuality. They are abusers of power and control. That's what they get off on. And they do that by raping children and enjoying it.
And
they enjoy it so much, they repeat it, and they access a lot of pornography. And it is a wash. I could spend every moment of my working day hunting these profiles down, map as they call themselves now. It wouldn't be a drop in the ocean. And if I was to report them now to Twitter, they wouldn't do a thing about them. They're saying basically they're allowed to have sexual images of children that are drawn and like anime, hentai, lolicon, which is all paedophile porn. Again, it's queering boundaries between sex, age and everything. It's informed by queer theory.
I hate to do this now, just to be the devil's advocate, right? But there's no better woman I don't think I've ever met to answer this than you, because you worked with male sexual offenders. Is it an illness, the attraction to children? How do you feel about that?
No. Oh, it's absolutely not an illness. It's a choice men make about their behaviour and how they relate to women and children. It's not an illness. I was speaking to someone this morning about it, and I get quite cross about this. They're not ill. They make choices to hurt children. They put their desire and their willingness to put their latest orgasm above anything to do with children's rights or the safety of children. It's choice.
And maybe this is the reason why chemical castration hasn't worked in the past then. I've looked into this.
No, men don't just abuse children or women with their penises. They do it with a lot of objects, as we know, with rough sex and stuff like that. Men don't just abuse their penis. They weaponize penises, but they use objects. I've interviewed sex offenders who have not used their penis, but they've used their tongue and their fingers. And again, it's had extremely damaging effect on victims for decades after.
I interviewed a couple of paedophile hunter groups on the show a few years ago, and one particular group, I liked them. I liked their approach. I liked their attitude. They weren't doing it for fame or to be an internet hero. And what I couldn't... We've got Bell Staffy on the line, by the way, this afternoon, this evening. What I was stunned by was them demonstrating to me just how easy it is to find men that want to abuse young boys and girls. So I suppose the next question is, how widespread in society do you believe, in your own experience, are paedophiles? I mean, it looks like it's an enormous percentage of society.
Do you really want my honest truth?
Do, of course. You can say what you want. There's no censorship zone here.
Okay, it's fucking massive.
Is it?
Massive. There are a lot of men with paedophile tendencies. That's why these Pornhub is full of child abuse images. Men are accessing porn. The younger, the better. When they're going to prostitution women, it's younger, the better. Yeah?
Yeah,
it's
on
huge.
The...
This abusive male abusive behaviour is absolutely massive.
What happened to pornography? That's a whole other... I mean, you'll be aware of a woman called Gail Dines, won't you, in Boston?
Yes, I know Gail, yes.
Who's an old pal of mine. She's been on with me a few times over the years. And she did an excellent interview with me some years ago, and she talked about pornography and the evolution of it. Pornography now, if you go to one of the main pornography sites, is disgusting, violent,
it's not,
horrendous.
Years ago, it was quite soft. Porn.
Well, it was lovemaking.
Now
wasn't it? Yeah.
It takes three. For instance, a 12-year-old. It will take that 12-year-old four clicks to get on hardcore anal gangbang, woman treated like an animal, black women treated like savages site. That's where a lot of children are getting their sex education as well, which is really, really worrying.
And I can't argue with it. I'd love to be the devil's advocate here and disagree, but I can't. And some of our listeners will be saying, you know, they'll say, oh, Bel Staffy's been a bit sensationalist there. But you're not. This is the porn.
I mean, no, it's based on my experience, my qualifications. I'm not making it up.
No, it's true.
Exposing
yeah.
it.
When I was 14, 15, and, you know, young lads, we managed to get a video. It was the old videos from Italy with the cheesy music and the fairly, you know, benign lovemaking. That was your porn and you were giggling then. Away. That was it. That was it back then.
No, it's
but now
hardcore.
It's
dreadful. It's BDSM. Now. It's anal. It's choking. It's strangulation of women. Brutalization and the savage, making black women look like savages. That's what's in that. And that's what children are clicking on, sometimes accidentally. And they're getting it. And that they're learning that they're learning about the mechanics of sex. Pornography is a lie. It's all made up anyway. You know, they're being taught the impossibleness of this sex. It's impossible. It's abusive. And they're not taught intimacy or anything like that.
And
to balance it. In any way balance it.
And I saw some notes from the relationship and sex education curriculum for the coming year. And this dice game they want very young kids to play with and then discuss sexual acts. You see, I actually believe I'm dreaming, to be honest. I can't accept that this is actually happening. I laugh out loud sometimes. And then I say, you shouldn't laugh because it isn't funny. But I think, how do I cope with the fact that they want to do this to kids?
Well, yeah, sometimes you have to get it out. It's very dark stuff that would...
We've frozen there again.
Gallows humour, and I've had to over the years. Sorry.
No,
I got gallows humour.
Yeah, I can see that from some of your tweets, and I don't mind it. I find it very funny myself. Bel Staffy is our guest. We've got Bel Staffy for another 5 or 6 minutes there. This is hugely important. Radical feminist writer, former probation officer. We've been talking about safe spaces for women, the vitally important issue that is safe spaces for women to be protected from an environment when they need to have an environment that is male free and trans women accessing those environments. We've talked about minor attracted persons, which is ridiculous. We're talking about paedophiles here. And can I just go back to what you said a minute ago, because it's very important. Twitter doesn't care. How can Twitter kick off a grime artist because he says some admittedly stupid things about Jewish people? I mean, fair enough, he's a bit of an idiot, but, you know, let's not condemn the man forever. How can they do that? But then when you report that there are people on there openly discussing having sex with children, and nothing happens.
Well, they're doing it. They're doing it, and it's the silencing of gender-critical women is massive. The silencing and disabling of paedophile accounts is now non-existent by Twitter. Non-existent. It's not happening.
We have to find out why that is. And I think journalists, presenters, activists around the world, whatever you're into, whichever particular issue you're into, you need to be interested in this. Tell us about XX Power Nation Nation. Yeah.
XX Power Nation is a public Facebook page that I run, that I host. It's basically a UK-based radical feminist page that I put a lot of stuff out that women wouldn't normally access, not radical feminism. That I have a following from all over the world internationally. I put a lot of fun stuff out in memes, so it's accessible because a lot of my readers, English isn't first language. It's for women. It's for women to... I put some serious stuff on there. It's for women to network, for us to get together and fight this shit. Stop it.
I've really enjoyed having you on today. Thanks for giving us your time. I really appreciate it. Is there any
You're
other...
really welcome, Richie. I've enjoyed it.
Well, thanks. Well, tell us this. Is there another resource or website that you'd like? I mean, you've mentioned the Facebook page and we will put a link out to it. But is there anywhere else that people can go to find out more about this?
Yeah, I'm on WordPress. They haven't banned me yet. And I'm bellstaffyonline.com at WordPress.
Yeah, and it's at bellstaffy on Twitter. So that's BELSTAFFIE. So do follow her there at bellstaffy
please,
on Twitter.
Brilliant. Yeah, I am the real deal. You won't get any bullshit from me.
Well, I look forward to you coming back in the future because this is going to run and run.
Richie. Excellent. Thank you very much for having me on.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks so much. That was Bellstaffy live, I think, this afternoon. Just give me a wave there. Lovely to chat with her today. From Yorkshire. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it is vaudeville, isn't it? So Wiley booted off, exiled. He should never see the light of day again. God love him, because he had some things to say about Jews, which we might not agree with. Some of you might. We might not. But it's fairly benign stuff, really, compared to minor attracted persons. It was Hayden Hewitt who gave me a heads up on this a few weeks ago. He's very interested in it. Why? How is he very interested in it? Well, Hayden is an internet man. When the internet began, he was very much into it and forums and chat rooms and open discussion and the free flow of information and the possibilities that went with that. Hugely interested in it from day one. He was involved in some gore sites and stuff like that, which people don't like. Fair enough. Very smart guy. And he's been following this with great interest. And I never saw anything like it, really, when I saw these people and these groups openly operating on Twitter, talking about, you know, recognition and validation of people whom are attracted to children. But we're okay, and, you know, we have rights as well. And as Belle Staffy was saying there, when you read the posts of these people, you can see that there is a trend towards, we should be considered as a sexuality group, or a group, you know, defined by our sexuality, the same as gays and lesbians. And of course, that's horseshit, because gays and lesbians are no more likely to be attracted to children than straight people. Now, I know some of my listeners on the far right won't like me saying that. Tough shit, Paddy. I don't care. That's how I see it. Gays and lesbians are no more likely to fancy children than straight people. But that's the move, that the movement that you're watching unfold, and Twitter is enabling it. And some of the stuff that's been posted by these so-called maps is pretty shocking stuff. And I don't believe in, you know, I don't believe in the banning of people based on their points of view. I believe in free speech. But as I've said before, there are limitations. There are not many limitations. One of them, of course, is incitement to violence. And Wiley treaded that line, or crossed that line, with his posts on Friday. You know, Jews should be shot, kind of a thing. That's incitement. There's no place for that. There's also no place, nor should there ever be any place, for people openly discussing having sex with children on Twitter or on Instagram and looking for validation for feeling like that. There's no room for that anywhere, in my opinion. That was Belle Staffy on the Richie Allen Radio Show. 15 minutes it is to the top of the hour. Hi to Amanda Thompson. How are you doing, Amanda? Enjoying listening to Belle Staffy and to Gilad, she says. I'll take note of the rest of your tweet, Amanda. Thank you very much. Base Ninja, my pal in Liverpool, tweets, in my opinion, the evidence for me indicates the normalising of pedo behaviour is coming from way on high up, he says. See Jimmy Savile, etc. Well, let's never forget that Jimmy Savile was able to operate within the corridors of the BBC, in BBC studios, openly, was able to sexually abuse children, openly. And no self-respecting journalist could ever say that there was a satisfactory conclusion to the inquiry into what Savile was doing. A lot of people knew what Jimmy Savile was doing. And I don't mean other celebrities necessarily, but I mean his bosses. Right up the chain to the office of the Director General of the BBC. They knew what Savile was doing. They didn't move against him. And by not moving against him, they were accessories after the fact. So I totally agree with that. That was buried. That was covered up, what Savile was doing. Stutties Rehab says, where do they want this to lead to? What Aldous Huxley warned us about when visiting the hatchery in Brave New World. He says there, yeah. Hi to Liz Jones. How you doing, Liz? Scroll on down there. I will invite Peter Tatchell back on the programme. Of course I will. And let's see if he accepts. Let's see if he accepts the invitation to come on. Aye. Mad times, huh? Mad times. I'll tell you what. Here's David Bowie. Let's get David Bowie on so I can have a glass of water. And then we'll come back and we'll round up today's news. How about that? All right. Sounds good to me. Hey, Natalie Stacey is live on Trigger Warning. Natalie Stacey. Metal show live on triggerwarning.tv after this. How are you, Natalie? David Bowie on the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester, 9 minutes to the top of the hour. And the Wiley thing, Facebook have suspended him. I mentioned this earlier on, but I made a bags of it. I made a balls of it. As we say in Erin, I made a Leo Rody of it. I messed it up, basically. Basically, Facebook haven't suspended Wiley because of the tweets he put out on Friday. They've suspended him because he has had a go at his critics. Number of Jewish people had a go at him. Alan Sugar, Lord my arse. The day I call Alan Sugar Lord is the day I give it up. Is the day I hang it up. Alan Sugar, world-class arsehole. David Baddiel, the comedian, whom his production company were desperate last year for me to appear on a documentary the BBC was making about anti-Semitism. You might remember, I said at the time, of course I will appear, but I shall be taking my friend Hayden with me with his camera, lest you try and stitch me up in the edit, because the big baldy gammon, again referring to himself in the third person, which isn't very good, I said, this Irish boy's not stupid. I know you're going to stitch me up in the edit and try and make it out like I have got something against my Jewish brethren and sistren, which of course I don't. And the BBC said, no, you're not bringing your own camera. And I said, well, you can feck off then. And they persevered. They kept ringing me and asking me to participate. And I said, yes, of course I'll participate and I'll talk about free speech and I'll talk about, you know, all of that. And the reason why I have so much hostility sometimes, so much invective when it comes to Israel, of course I will. But you won't stitch me up. Anyway, long story short, it never happened. David Baddiel. And the other one was Emma Barnett, the BBC Radio 5 presenter. So the grime star, Wiley, went on Facebook using his real name, which is Richard Cowie. And he had a go at Sugar, Baddiel and Barnett. And his post said, it's all very silly, really. Not him, he's not silly. He said, listen, Golders Green. Golders Green is an area of London and it would have a large Jewish community there. Listen, Golders Green, ring my sister and let's meet ASAP. Presumably his sister is his agent or his manager, manageress. He said, David Baddiel, come and talk to my face. Fair enough. Then he asked, who called the police? Are you from Golders Green? I am coming to sit down with you. And then Labyrinth, you could come along as you have forgotten what colour you are. And he was suspended off of Facebook for saying that. Which is a bit bizarre, really. If that's the real reason he was suspended, I don't understand why they wouldn't bring him on. Emma Barnett was very quick to bring Kevin Myers on her programme 3 years ago in a car crash interview where she wouldn't allow Kevin answer a question and didn't acknowledge the fact, didn't mention it, that the Irish Jewish Council were supporting Kevin Myers and saying, no, he's not anti-Semitic at all. He doesn't hate Jews at all. He's a good lad, is Kevin. I remember I told you this story before, but it bears repeating. The morning after Myers was fired, I was on a plane from Manchester to Southampton. I know, you lazy bastard, BBG. You could have walked it. Not to Southampton, no. I was on a plane to Southampton and I was sitting next to a Jewish gentleman. And We were chatting during the flight and we swapped newspapers, which is a nice thing to do. Very short flight, 40 minutes or thereabouts. And I said to him, you're Jewish. And he said, I am. I said, I noticed you read the same article I did about Kevin Myers. And he said, I did. I said, do you think Myers should be fired for suggesting in a very, I would say, witty way that Claudia Winkleman and Vanessa Feltz Jewish women are not stupid when it comes to doing a bit of business? And he went, no, Myers is right. Myers is right. We're not stupid, he said. It's a cultural thing, he said, Richie. We had introduced ourselves at that stage. Cultural thing. He said, you'll find the same with you know, a lot of Pakistani families. You can't generalise. You can't say that every Jewish kid is brought up, taught about the value of the pound. You can't generalise and say that every Pakistani kid is brought up to know the value of the pound. But I wish, as an Irish kid, that I was brought up to know the value of the pound. My mother was a spendthrift, money in one hand, out the other. No respect for money whatsoever. Didn't do us any good, right? I wouldn't have minded having a bit of that Jewish sensibility, that Pakistani sensibility. And my mate on the plane said to me, Jewish businessman based in Manchester, was doing a bit of business in I might have been on the Isle of Wight. He said, yeah, there was nothing remotely bigoted about what Meyer said. It was a funny quip. But he was fired. Barnett interviewed him, went full grandstanding, tried to embarrass him, made herself look stupid. And the whole point of my little mini preamble there was that if Barnett was any good, she'd be inviting Wiley onto her programme. Come on. Bring him on. Give him a chance to explain what it is he means. Rather than condemn him forevermore to exile. You don't deserve to live amongst us, the righteous. We are righteous, we are virtuous, we are good people. You are a bigoted little bastard. You should be vanished and banished. No, nobody should be vanished. Nobody should be banished. Whatever their opinions are. We have to live with people with whom we see the world entirely differently. We have to accept it. Some of our relatives have opinions about people and groups of people that we just laugh at. But we love them anyway. And that's how it should be with everybody. I don't care what your opinion is. I don't care if you hate Jews or hate Muslims. You're wrong to hate anybody. You're a bit silly. But, you know, we are the sum of our parts. We're not, nor should we be defined by our view of one particular issue or subject. But there's an agenda, of course, to change that. This is how it used to be historically. We would see people as the sum of their parts. We would acknowledge what they had put in the bank of goodness and kindness. Not anymore, though. You say something now that's deemed to be unsayable? Well, you're finished. And that's no good. It's not good. It doesn't bode well for the future. Thank you so much to Gilad Atman. Thanks to Bell Staffy. Thanks to you for listening. Speak tomorrow, Wednesday. Bye now. Bye.